Declara abierta la segunda sesión del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas. Distinguidos miembros del foro, de conformidad con el programa de trabajo aprobado y en cumplimiento de las recomendaciones formuladas por el Foro Permanente, procederemos ahora a examinar el tema 3 del programa titulado Debate sobre el tema especial para el año, los pueblos indígenas, desarrollo con cultura e identidad, artículos 3 y 32 de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Informe de la reunión del grupo de expertos sobre el tema especial. Informe del grupo de apoyo interinstitucional sobre el tema especial. En relación con este tema, tomaremos conocimiento del informe de la reunión del grupo de expertos sobre el tema especial y el informe del grupo de apoyo interinstitucional sobre este tema. Después de la presentación de estos informes, daré la palabra a los participantes inscritos en la lista de oradores para que hagan sus declaraciones sobre los temas del programa. De no haber observaciones con respecto al programa de trabajo propuesto, para la sesión de esta tarde daré paso al informe de la reunión del grupo de expertos.
Un momento, ¿puedes decir a la gente
que...
¿Qué? ¿Que haya más?
Ask them to a little bit to quiet down, say quiet.
De no hablar sin...
Por favor.
Por favor, se les ruega guardar silencio y atender. Para el informe del grupo de expertos sobre el tema especial, quisiera invitar a la señora Victoria Tauli Corpus de acompañarnos al podio para presentar el informe del grupo de expertos sobre el desarrollo con cultura e identidad, artículos 3 y 32, por favor, señora Victoria Tauli.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. First, I would like to congratulate you for your election as the chair for the 9th session of the Permanent Forum, and I'm so happy that you are able to assume this post, very important post, and I am confident that you are going to provide the leadership that we need for this 9th session. I was asked to present to you the report of the expert group meeting on the theme of this year, which is development with culture and identity, Articles 3 and 32 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I would please like to refer you to document E/C19/2010/14. This expert group meeting was held in January 12 to 14 of this year, and we invited, the forum has invited experts from all the different regions. And the experts who were invited to participate in the meeting were Kanyenki Sena from Africa, Yelena Porsanger, Asami from the Arctic, Mirna Cunningham, a Miskita from Central South America in the Caribbean, Anna Naikanchina from Eastern Europe, Russian Federation, Central Asia, and Transcaucasian, Jan Bamba, a Dayak from Indonesia for the Asian region, and Jeanette Armstrong, an Okanagan, for North America. The expert from Pacific wasn't able to participate. Many observers from the agencies, UN agencies, and also from intergovernmental organizations and governments as well as NGOs were able to participate. The idea behind the expert group meeting, which the permanent forum usually holds every year, is to go into more depth in discussing the theme that has been adopted for the particular year. So in this session, we looked into the issue of development and identified the problems that indigenous peoples have historically faced in the imposition of the dominant development model in their communities as well as in the countries where they live. The participants in this expert group meeting pointed out that economic liberalism, which promotes the idea that sustained economic growth measured by gross domestic product is the driver of human progress and development. This view is a product of a particular worldview, and its interpretation and implementation often reflect the culture and values of the dominant society. This economic ideology, which was packaged in the past three decades as the Washington Consensus, pushes for trade liberalization and export-led growth in the liberalization of financial markets, deregulation, and privatization. While it is viewed as a framework for addressing the challenges of global and national development, its promotion of debt dependence, export orientation, and production and consumption beyond ecological limits has resulted in untenable inequity, injustice, and the destruction of diverse economic systems and ecosystems of indigenous peoples. The participants to the expert group meeting viewed that this particular development paradigm is the main root cause of the global economic crisis that the world faces today, as well as the global ecological crisis of climate change and biodiversity erosion. And indigenous peoples, the participants view that this is one of the main reasons why indigenous peoples have been pushed to strengthen their own movements to be able to confront the human rights violations that accompany the implementation of this kind of development paradigm. And this explains why there has been the resurgence of strong resistance of indigenous peoples against globalization, which was viewed as an aggressive attempt to shape national economies, to mimic the economic system of the industrialized countries, which is grossly unjust and has promoted further inequality and environmental devastation. So for the participants of the expert group meeting, they view that the current development paradigm is a problem rather than a solution for many indigenous peoples. The participants recognize that the challenge remains for indigenous peoples to develop their own paradigms based on the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. There needs to be a concept of development with culture and identity that reflects indigenous people's own visions, perspectives, as well as strategies that respect their individual and collective rights, that are self-determining, and that are sensitive and relevant to their situation and communities. The participants also have recognized that there have been positive developments in the setting of standards that can support indigenous people's rights. And this includes the International Labour Organization conventions, in particular Convention 169, the UNESCO Universal Declaration on Cultural Diversity and other related conventions, and the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. In particular, Article 3, the right to self-determination, and Article 32, on the right to determine and develop priorities and strategies for the development or use of their lands and territories. The experts who came to the expert group meeting spoke on the different areas of development. One of the experts, John Bamba, a Dayak from Indonesia, spoke about the credit union movement, the Pancorkasih movement, which they have developed for the past 30 years in their region and which is now providing the kind of development that they are seeking and they are wanting to establish in their communities. This initiative enhanced the collective development for indigenous peoples through the provision of loans for livelihoods to secure education and health care and the provision of pension funds, and also it promoted gender justice and the increasing the participation of women. He also cited that this particular credit union movement has protected the rights of the indigenous peoples' rights to their lands because the indigenous peoples are not forced to sell their lands in times of dire need. Indeed, this experience that was presented by him provided inspiration to the participants because they have seen that an institution like a credit union can be reformed and reshaped to meet to use the values of indigenous peoples and to meet the needs of indigenous peoples. The other experts also presented case studies in their areas of work, such as an expert, Jeanette Okanagan, who is Armstrong, he is an Okanagan, talked about the way they have reclaimed their traditional livelihood through processes that entailed extensive community participation. And she explained that they are salmon peoples, but salmon has disappeared in their communities for the past 60 years. But because of the efforts that they have done to use their traditional knowledge on how to bring home the salmon, last year, finally, the salmon has came back into the rivers because of the knowledge that they gathered and used, coupled with the modern knowledge that they also have used. And this is an example of the combination using the traditional knowledge as well as the relevant modern scientific knowledge that can help strengthen indigenous peoples' economic systems, which are the basis of their cultures as well as their identities. Another expert, Yelena Porsanger, who is a Sami, spoke about the importance of research. You know, that the research in the past has always regarded indigenous peoples as objects of research and not the subjects. You know? And so their efforts in Sami University College has been to really strengthen the capacities of indigenous peoples themselves to define their own research agenda, to use their own epistemologies and their own ways of knowing and learning to be able to generate the knowledge that is coming from their own experiences. She stressed that indigenous peoples are knowledge producers. They are not just recipients of knowledge. They are producers of knowledge, and the academic institutions should recognize this because this is a major contribution in the development of indigenous peoples. In terms of recommendations, there have been a lot of recommendations, but before we went into the recommendations, one of the things that was stressed by one of the major conclusions stressed by the experts is that all too often the blind faith in self-correcting efficient markets and the promotion of infinite consumption of finite resources, coupled with the promise that economic liberalization will lead towards rapid economic growth, results in the overexploitation of natural resources, and indigenous peoples, their cultures and identities are seen as obstacles to progress. And this is the issue that the expert workshop had to deal with, to debunk the idea that indigenous peoples' cultures, worldviews, and philosophies are obstacles to development. So this, on the basis of these conclusions, the workshop group came out with very concrete recommendations, which are of course contained in the document, so I will not go through all of these. I'll just like to highlight the things that I believe are need to be emphasized. One recommendation is in related to traditional knowledge. The indigenous experts as well as the other participants agree that indigenous people's knowledge systems are still being undermined and denigrated by the dominant knowledge systems, and therefore there needs to be efforts done to ensure that this knowledge is sustained and continues to be vibrant, because this is the knowledge system that that underpins the cultures also in the identities of indigenous peoples. It was recommended that indigenous peoples' organizations should be supported to expand, to continue and expand their engagement with ongoing international processes such as those in the Convention on Biological Diversity, the Intergovernmental Committee of the WIPO, as well as other areas where, and UNESCO, other areas where the issue of indigenous knowledge systems are being discussed and policies on these are being developed. Another recommendation is related to research. Indigenous research can make an important contribution to advancing indigenous people's development with culture and identity. And research, therefore, has to be an empowering activity for indigenous peoples. They identified that in light of the fact that research processes indicate that the impact of colonization continues to be felt in the field of research, there is a need to challenge the hegemony of conventional Western non-indigenous research practices. And one of the recommendations is that protocols that have been developed by indigenous organizations in various countries to regulate or to guide research should be further enhanced, and they are recommending that on the basis of these existing protocols, the permanent forum can also adopt a code of conduct on research which can be used and disseminated more widely. The other issue is related to language. It is clear that the use of language is crucial in development with culture and identity, because language is not just a means of communication, but it is also a documentation system. Each word carries cultural messages and richness of meanings, and the richness of terminology in indigenous languages must also be protected in the development processes, because it is central to indigenous people's culture and identity. So the recommendation in relation to language is to, of course, look into the recommendations that have come up when indigenous languages was a theme of the permanent forum, but also to strengthen the efforts of indigenous peoples to revitalize, to strengthen their cultures and languages. The other issue that was discussed extensively was related to the issue of extractive industries, because this is an issue that indigenous peoples in all parts of the world are confronted with. And in relation to the discussion on this, there were references were made to the efforts of the Special Representative of the Secretary General on the issue of human rights and transnational corporations and other business enterprises. At present, the experts recognize the efforts of the Special Representative to develop a conceptual framework to advance business and human rights agenda. And they reiterated in the workshop that the framework that was developed by the Special Representative, which rests on three pillars, should be enhanced and developed further, particularly for indigenous peoples. These three pillars are, first, the duty of the state to protect against human rights abuses by third parties, including businesses, through appropriate policies, regulation, and adjudication, which is grounded on international human rights law. The second pillar is the corporate responsibility to respect human rights, which means to act with due diligence to avoid infringing on the rights of others. And the third pillar is the greater access for victims to effective remedy, both judicial and non-judicial. It is further recommended that experiences, because we always, for instance, the International Council on Mining and Metals, they always talk about good practices that they are doing. But in the expert workshop that was held on extractive industries, there was a lot of skepticism among indigenous peoples. And so one of the recommendations was that this international council provides a list of 10 projects that they recommend as best practices. And this list should be accompanied by an invitation for members of the forum to visit and have access to project sites and files. By doing this, then we can really, the forum can see for themselves with whether these are really good practices. And if they are, then these can be practices that can be disseminated and shared also with other extractive corporations, industry corporations. Finally, the expert group workshop also recognized that this year is the year, the 20th year of the Human Development Report. And before the session, the members of the forum went to have a meeting with the UNDP to discuss their views on the Human Development Report anniversary publication. So this is the Human Development Report for 2010. And one of the recommendations that came out from that meeting, which was reiterated in this expert group meeting, was to say that there should be a process that will expand the Human Development Index to include the possibility of developing an Indigenous Peoples Development Index. Because Indigenous peoples have been saying that they have a different framework or concept of development, and some of these are already being articulated very strongly, like the Suma Kausai or the Suma Kamanya living well concept that's being proposed by the government of Bolivia. And the different concepts of living well, or buen vivir, or vivir buen, which many indigenous peoples are promoting and living by. No, so this idea is the idea is that the Human Development Index be expanded to really include Indigenous Peoples Development Index, and maybe also develop a framework called the Indigenous Peoples Empowerment Measure. They realized that this was developed on gender. There is a gender development index, and there is also a gender empowerment measure. So the proposal of the experts is that there should be efforts along these lines, but more focus on Indigenous peoples. And the last point was in relation to the review of the Millennium Development Goals in September of this year. You might have heard the Secretary General mentioning that September of this year, there will be a midterm review of how the Millennium Development Goals are being implemented. And the experts recommended that Indigenous people should be actively involved in this process, not only at the global level, but also at the national level. So they are recommending that governments who are doing these reviews should also invite Indigenous peoples in the processes. And lastly, they at that time that we were having the expert workshop, that was also the time that we launched the State of the World's Indigenous Peoples Report. And we the experts have identified that this is a major breakthrough to get the UN to publish a State of the World's Indigenous Peoples Report. And the experts have recommended that this effort be sustained for the coming years. So these are the recommendations that are contained in the report, as well as the conclusions. The comprehensive ideas can be read in the report. So I'd like to thank very much the experts who participated in the process, as well as the members of the forum who took part, Tonya Gonella Frischner, our chairperson Carlos Mamani, myself, and who's the other? I just checked. Just to be sure. And Pavel Sulyansiga, our colleague from Russia, who is not with us today because of the volcanic ash. Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias, hermana Victoria, por el reporte tan importante que nos hace del taller que realizamos durante la segunda semana del mes de enero de este año. Seguidamente voy a invitar a la señora Susana Schnutengen, representante de la Organización de las Naciones Unidas para la Educación, la Ciencia y la Cultura, UNESCO, para que nos acompañe en el podio y presentar el informe del Grupo de Apoyo Interagencial sobre el tema que nos ocupa hoy. Tiene la palabra.
Thank you, Chair of the Permanent Forum. In fact, Mr. Carlos Mamani, I would like to congratulate you also to your new honorary position as Chair of the Permanent Forum. Dear Forum members, dear representatives from governments, dear UN colleagues and representatives of other intergovernmental organizations, it is really a pleasure and an honor for us at UNESCO to present to you the joint interagency paper on development with culture and identity in light of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. 14 members of the IASG contributed to this paper, namely FAO, IFAD, ILC, ILO, OHCHR, SCBD, the Permanent Forum Secretariat, UNDP, UNEP, UNESCO, UNFPA, UN Habitat, UNICEF, and WIPO. The idea of this paper emerged in 2008 at the annual meeting of the ISG, which UNESCO was chairing back then in Paris. We had organized a roundtable on the theme with the participation of forum members who incidentally had come to UNESCO for a first official forum visit. Indeed, Victoria Taulikorpus, who just spoke, Margaret Lukaua, and Carlos Mamani were there. It was then that the ISG decided to take the 2010 forum theme as an opportunity for us as agencies to reflect critically on how our organizations understand development and in how far culture, identity, gender, and the rights of indigenous peoples are reflected in the discourse, in the legal instruments, and in the concrete action of our respective organizations. We were hoping that through such a reflection and analysis, we would come up with some key ideas on how to support processes of taking development with culture and identity forward through UN work. It was a challenging task to consolidate the perspectives, know-how, and experiences of 14 agencies into one paper, but it was also a very enriching experience and a wonderful opportunity for us as agencies to reflect more deeply on indigenous people's proposal for a new development paradigm, and doing this from a joint UN perspective. While I will introduce the paper and some key ideas, I know that my colleagues here in the room who contributed to the paper will get back on some of the points made and use the opportunity to illustrate some of them. You can find a short version of this paper in the official forum documents, but there's also a long version with all the annexes that contain the practical examples as a conference room available outside this room. The paper is structured in three parts. The first part is on conceptual and legal underpinnings of development with culture and identity. The second part is more practical on applications of this notion, culture with development with culture and identity in the practice of the UN. And a third part on opportunities and challenges in making development with culture and identity happen. In the first part, we discuss how the notion of development has evolved in the UN from single-modeled economic progress to broader notions of human and sustainable development and well-being, We show how the discourse increasingly took culture, identity, diversity, and human rights into account, and eventually opened up to the understanding reflected in the proposed paradigm by indigenous peoples, that development is not culturally neutral, but is rooted in cultures, in all its diversity. It may mean different things to different people and communities depending on their values, languages, experiences, and worldviews. Recognizing the indivisibility of culture and development implies that there is no prescribed pathway for the development of a society, no single model on which development strategies should be based. The chapter furthermore shows how culture is actually an asset for development and not, as all too often wrongly stated, an obstacle. It is a source of inspiration and creativity, the force that allows people to develop ideas and strategies for the future. This resonates strongly with development, with culture and identity, which calls for indigenous peoples to be the creators and agents of their development strategies. The chapter underlines the right to be different and distinct, which is not only a human right, but a requirement for cultural diversity, which in turn we need for the future development of humankind, just as biological diversity is required for nature. The chapter discusses the emergence and evolution of the human development paradigm, which Vicky also mentioned in her presentation, which got to be known as putting people back to the center of the development process, suggested new sets of development indicators, and emphasized that the basic purpose of development is to enlarge people's choices. Human development means more than health, education, a decent standard of living, and political freedom. People's identities must be recognized and accommodated by the state, and people must be free to express these identities without being discriminated against in other aspects of their lives. Choice, fundamental freedoms, participation are indeed central to development with culture and identity, pointing to close links with human rights. The chapter analyzes the different processes of bringing culture into the center of the development discourse, notably through the World Decade on Culture and Development and the different world reports on culture. It explains the significance of respecting and promoting cultural and biological diversity for sustainable development and the importance of a rights-based approach to development, which the UN promoted since 2003. Special attention is given to the rights, needs, and aspirations of women and children in the paper. The chapter thus presents the different legal underpinnings of development with culture and identity, which culminated in the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. They notably include the jurisprudence of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights and the case law and general commons of human rights treaty bodies and the ILO Convention already mentioned in previous interventions, stressing self-determined development based on recognition of the culture and identity of the communities concerned. Other international instruments in the field of cultural and biological diversity are also discussed, as they promote key dimensions of development with culture and identity. There's the UNESCO Declaration on Cultural Diversity and the related conventions on intangible heritage and creative expressions, the WIPO draft provisions for the effective protection of traditional knowledge and traditional cultural expressions against misappropriation and misuse, the Convention on Biological Diversity. Indeed, human rights and cultural rights, which are an integral part, hold a central place in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, together with the right to development and the right to participation. The second chapter, entitled Applying DCI in UN Areas of Work, is much more concrete. Based on the examples we received from the different agencies, we identified 9 different thematic areas where UN agencies are very active. One is sustaining the livelihoods of indigenous peoples, including food system and food sovereignty, since they represent key sources for the identity, survival, and economic development of indigenous communities. FAO and IFAD are particularly active. Access to land, territories, and resources by supporting and facilitating consultation, dialogue, negotiation between indigenous peoples, governments, and third parties. the sustainable use of natural resources and protection of biodiversity. Another one is climate change. There is the issue of adequate housing, where the UN has become active. Healthcare and prevention, that is culture and gender sensitive and rights-based. UNFPA has been one leader in this work. Mother tongue and intercultural education, where UNICEF works a lot, and UNESCO. The protection and promotion of the creative capacity, heritage, and knowledge systems of indigenous peoples. And finally, educating and advocating for the human rights of indigenous peoples. From a perspective of development with culture and identity, we found some strong points when analyzing these different experiences and projects. The examples actually take the specific situation, sociocultural values, heritage, and perspectives of indigenous peoples as a starting point and an asset to build upon. Several examples acknowledged indigenous peoples' leadership in finding their own development solutions, moving away from simply reducing indigenous communities to victims of poverty. The examples also illustrated a shift from a one-size-fits-all approach to development to diversified ways of addressing development issues. However, at the time of the analysis showed that culturally sensitive approaches do not automatically mean that they are in coherence with development with culture and identity, because they need to respect the right to self-determination, which is so central to indigenous people's vision of development. For example, projects in public service domains often focus on rendering them more accessible to indigenous peoples, but do less on seeing how indigenous peoples' institutions in this area can be strengthened. Even when indigenous cultures and identity are central in a project, as it is sometimes the case, it could still go against DCI, the development with culture and identity approach, if the standards of community control and participation are not respected. So it is not a simple issue to apply development with culture and identity, and it can be argued that it is essentially a transversal, intersectoral approach, in which processes are probably as determining for its successful application as the specific subject matters. Accordingly, our paper highlights the need to identify adequate participatory methods and discusses participatory mapping, the cultural programming lenses, and the approaches in communication for development. The third chapter is about processes and challenges of setting DCI in motion, notably at country level. It stresses that DCI is an ambitious approach which requires specific efforts, processes, and methodologies for effective application. As possible ways forward, it presents extensively the UNDG guidelines on indigenous peoples' issues, which actually provide a roadmap for implementing the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples through joint UN work at country level. The guidelines stress respect for and application of the principle of free, prior, and informed consents, full and effective participation of indigenous peoples at every stage of development, disaggregated data and indicators on the situation of indigenous peoples, and thus, as the UN, we have been working on these different issues. Other important areas where some progress has been made are the establishment of consultative and participatory mechanisms for engaging with indigenous peoples at regional and country level, UNICEF, UNDP, WIPO, UNEP, etc. There are similar forums planned by IFAD and UN Habitat. Increased capacity building efforts on indigenous peoples' issues in UN country teams. Trainings have already been conducted in Nepal, the Philippines, and Ecuador. Consolidation, completion, and articulation of the relevant legal instruments that were mentioned in my presentation and also in Vicky's earlier. Adoption of policies on indigenous peoples at the level of UN agencies were highlighted as a positive factor for DCI. Here, IFAD, the World Bank, IADB, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, UNDP, FAO, and adopted such policies, and other agencies are in the process. The third chapter furthermore provides a critical and detailed analysis of the current aid architecture, because that is a challenge to promoting development with culture and identity. The basic document of this new architecture, the Paris Declaration, for example, emphasizes that implementation should be through country systems and that conditionalities should be drawn from developing countries' own policies. However, in many development countries, particularly in Africa and Asia, there is no formal legislative or policy recognition of indigenous people's rights. And there is thus an inherent risk for further exclusion of indigenous peoples in the development processes if specific safeguards are not developed. From our reflections, we identified a number of key messages, priority of actions, and some issues for further reflection, which you can also find in your paper. Let me just try to present them. Development interventions, as we have seen in this joint work, can be detrimental and has been detrimental to the population or community that they were intended to support. And this will happen if such interventions are founded on preconceived assumptions rather than listening and understanding what is meaningful to the communities concerned. Indigenous peoples are particularly familiar with negative effects of development. Indigenous peoples have developed effective methods of coping with social and environmental change. These capacities are valuable assets for sustainable development, and they need to be supported. Development with culture and identity draws from and creates synergies, in fact, between critical UN conceptual development and legal advances. As was said earlier, it is an attempt to link principles of human development, sustainability, gender equality, cultural and biological diversity within larger human rights frameworks. Development with culture and identities requires new ways of going about development that emphasize full participation and the need for new governance and institutional arrangements. In addition to much-needed institutional commitment, development with culture and identity will require genuine intercultural dialogue between indigenous and non-indigenous partners to reinforce mutual respect and appreciation for the respective worldviews, values, cultures, socioeconomic institutions. So thus, priority area for actions that we found. One is that the UN Declaration and the rights of indigenous peoples needs to be mainstreamed into all UN policies and programs in order to put the new approach into practice. We emphasize that we need the UNDG guidelines and action plan on indigenous peoples should be implemented as they provide a useful roadmap to promote development with culture and identity at country level. We underlined that dialogue with governments is required on the current aid architecture, which in principle acknowledges a human rights-based approach to development cooperation, but is faced with the reality where the rights enshrined in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples are not systematically respected. Taking development with culture and identity forward through UN action will require careful assessments of our own program through the lens of key principles and norms of development with culture and identity, such as self-determination, cultural rights, and cultural and biological diversity. The elaboration of a programming tool for development with culture and identity could be considered. There are finally some issues where we feel they merit further reflection. For example, how to ensure the indivisibility of the right to self-determination with other key rights and principles of development with culture and identity? How to advance the discussion on possible tensions between indigenous peoples' holistic cosmovision and anthropocentric worldviews that anchors much of UN development discourse? The discussions on work on linking cultural and biological diversity have opened up new spaces in the UN to address this gap, but more intercultural dialogue is required in the context of development with culture and identity. Finally, indigenous identities, like all human identities, are complex, fluid, and of a multiple nature, and thus cannot be confined to a single definition. In this regard, what is the place of plural identities and multicultural affiliations of indigenous individuals and communities, such as those living in urban areas, in the context of policy and programming for development with culture and identities? These are some of the issues and questions that emerge from our reflection, and we would like to thank the forum for having put the crucial theme on the agenda for this year's session, which really comes at a good moment since it coincides with both the International Year on Biodiversity and the International Year for the Rapprochement of Cultures, as well as 20 years of the Human Development Report. So thank you.
Gracias, señora representante de la UNESCO, y también agradecerle por la invitación que nos hizo en aquella oportunidad de ser parte de la reunión. Y quisiera recordar también que justo por el esfuerzo que se hacía en mi país de llevar adelante la aplicación de los derechos contenidos en la declaración, mi país estaba en una situación de mucha efervescencia política, y ahí sentí la solidaridad de los colegas de la interagencial y especialmente de nuestra presidenta en ese momento, Victoria Tauli, que junto con Margaret y Bartolomé demostraron esa solidaridad con un documento que ha sido importante para el proceso en mi país. Quisiera ahora invitar a la señora Rebecca Greenspan, administradora asociada del Programa de las Naciones Unidas para el Desarrollo, PNUD, a acompañarnos en el podio y a formular su declaración respecto al tema que nos ocupa en esta sesión. Señora Greenspan tiene la palabra.
Muchísimas gracias, muy amable. Let me send my warm regards to all the members of the panel, and to welcome all the distinguished members of the Permanent Forum and representative of the indigenous peoples. It is with great honor that I address this forum again this year on behalf of UNDP. I am pleased in particular to have the opportunity to contribute to this discussion on development with culture and identity. As articulated in the Human Development Report launched by UNDP in 2004, and the report was called, let me remind the audience, Cultural Liberty in Today's Diverse World. This report, as I said, was launched in 2004 by UNDP and said that people all over the world must be able to choose their identity and express who they are without losing the respect of others or being excluded from choices and opportunities that are important for leading a full life. And now a lot has been done in the UN system since 2004. And we just heard the report, the interagency report, on all the things that are happening, and even the launch of UNDG guidelines for including the indigenous people clearly in the program. So this is inherent in the concept of human development. If we define development as expanding the capabilities of people to live a life that they value, then development must help societies recognize and accommodate diverse ethnicities, religions, language, and values. The Human Development Report referred to this as cultural liberty and persuasively argues that it is a central aspect of human development which requires us to look beyond social, political, and economic indicators. Cultural exclusion exists on an extensive scale across every continent. We know that indigenous people are too often an excluded group, and as a result, are frequently poorer and less politically represented than the non-indigenous people. Mr. Chairperson, you were telling me precisely
that UN, before this session started, that UNDP has to make a stronger effort and a more effort on the democratic governance part to really include indigenous people, for example, in Latin America. And you are right. So in this sense, as I said many times, they are less politically represented. But cultural exclusion goes beyond poverty or lack of opportunities. It also makes, and Victoria was saying that before, it also makes invisible the contribution of the excluded group to societies at large. It's not only poverty or marginalization. It's also the invisibility, taking that word from the feminist camp, the invisibility of the contributions to society, to ideas, to history, to arts, to culture at large, to language. And in a way, it prevents the transfers, the transference of ideas, knowledge, and experiences. Cultural liberty is not automatic. It will not necessarily come about due to a change in the laws or economic progress. Fostering cultural liberty requires explicit policies and the full attention of government to combat prejudice and discrimination. States need to recognize cultural differences in their laws and institutions, as well as formulating policies to ensure that the interests of particular groups are not ignored or overridden. And they need to do so in ways that do not contradict other goals and strategies of human development, such as human rights, building a capable state, and ensuring equal opportunities to all citizens. This is not easy. But there are innovative and successful examples of expanding cultural liberty around the world, including through meaningful social dialogue, inclusive and transparent decision-making, recognizing the value of traditional knowledge, and explicitly redressing wrongs through policies such as affirmative action. To take a specific example, and Victoria was referring to this earlier too, we know that extractive industries has adversely affected the quality of life, life choices, and livelihoods of indigenous peoples around the world through displacement, pollution, and inadequate compensation. Through experience, we have learned that meaningful consultation and the participation of indigenous peoples are an important part to address this challenge, and is strengthening the dialogue and the capacity of local and national institutions how we can tackle this very difficult and complex issue. States, indigenous people, and international institutions need to collaborate to find and apply the best methods to ensure that indigenous people have a genuine stake in the decisions that affect them and a voice in society at large. Expanding cultural freedoms is an important goal in human development, one that needs urgent attention. All people want to be free to be who they are. All people want to be free to express their identity as members of a group with shared commitments and values. Equally important is ensuring that the gains of economic and social development, such as opportunities for better health care and education, reach all groups. This year, the international community is making an important effort to review and accelerate progress towards the Millennium Development Goals. In September, there will be an MDG summit to take stock of progress and agree on an action plan that can help to accelerate progress in the 5 years remaining before the due date of 2015. The world has seen remarkable progress towards the MDGs, but the progress has been uneven and unequal between and within countries. And in too many countries, the progress of indigenous people has lagged behind national indicators. For example, in virtually all countries with data that we have, infant mortality among indigenous people is considerably higher than among non-indigenous people, population. It is critical to recognize that indicators based on averages can hide the reality that marginalized and vulnerable groups.
UNDP is working to overcome what sometimes we refer to, and I'm sorry for this very strong concept, but it's what we call the tyranny of averages, because the average many times really hide much more than what they show. And by helping develop the statistical capacity of a wide range of national stakeholders, we really can help, as was beforehand asked for, to really break average into indicators that will be much more relevant for indigenous populations. Stronger capacity to produce and analyze disaggregated data will help reveal inequalities in progress among specific population groups, including indigenous peoples, and can help inform policies and programs intended to close MDG gaps. We would be happy to invite indigenous peoples' organizations to participate in the regional training workshops that will be held. The first will be in Africa in mid-May. UNDP is also helping to build the evidence the world will need to come to agreement on a concrete action plan at the MDG summit. We are drafting an international assessment that identifies bottlenecks and constraints to MDG progress, as well as the interventions that have proven to reduce hunger, poverty, HIV prevalence, and maternal and child mortality. The assessment will be informed by national MDG reports, which are now being written in around 30 countries around the world. We have emphasized to countries writing these reports the importance of using disaggregated data to demonstrate how MDG progress has differed across population groups. We are explicitly called on governments to engage civil society organizations, especially those representing groups normally absent from policy dialogue, including indigenous people. In addition, UNDP has developed an MDG acceleration framework to support governments and development partners to identify and address bottlenecks to MDG achievement. We have made an effort to mainstream human rights into the acceleration framework in order to help development partners examine issues of participation, discrimination, and cultural exclusion. The frameworks include questions on reducing language barriers and respecting different cultural needs. We note the expert group recommendation that, I quote, in the run-up to the MDG summit in September, indigenous peoples take part in national consultation processes, ensuring that their concerns are fed into the review process as well as in the meeting itself. I close the quotation. We encourage and welcome you to do so, as the world will not be able to achieve the MDGs in the 5 short years we have left without the concerted and focused effort of all groups. Your concerted effort and involvement is invaluable. UNDP will continue to work with you at all levels, global, regional, national, and community, to advance your cause. For example, we are pleased to be, and let me give 4 examples. 1, working with partners to set up over 400 groups of indigenous women in Bangladesh, enabling them to develop their own community projects and networks. 2nd example is that we are promoting sustainable development that respects the rights of indigenous people through the Global Environment Facility Small Grants Program. We are pleased that 15% of the small grants go to projects carried out by indigenous people. 3rd, we are raising the profile of local and indigenous efforts to reduce poverty by the sustainable use of biodiversity through the biannual Equator Prize. Over 50% of this prize have been received by indigenous groups. This year, a special recognition prize will be awarded for applied indigenous and traditional knowledge. And 4th, We are helping to support the implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People through the UN RED Program's operational guidance on engagement with indigenous people and other forest-dependent communities. The guidelines were drafted in full consultation with indigenous peoples and highlights, in particular, adherence to the principles of free, prior, and informed consent. They are currently being put into practice in a pilot project in Vietnam. Let me finish by saying that the human right to live free from discrimination is an intrinsic part of development, and development is a means to realizing these rights. Vigorous commitment to and progress on the MDGs should drive nations towards non-discrimination within regions, among indigenous communities, and between men, women, girls, and boys. I wish you all the fruitful discussions and negotiations during the forum and invite you to participate in the sessions and side events organized by UNDP and its partner during these 2 weeks, because we will have tomorrow the interactive dialogue on indigenous peoples' development challenges in Asia, and we will have also on Wednesday the Promoting Inclusive Parliaments, the Effective Participation of Indigenous Peoples in Decision-Making. So I wish to see you all in these events. Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias, señora Greenspan, por su presentación. Va a ser un documento muy importante que vamos a tratar en estos días que tratamos el tema desarrollo con cultura e identidad. Y ahora entraremos a la lista de oradores y quisiera para eso pedir por favor que los oradores que sean convocados lo hagan o presenten sus hagan sus presentaciones desde sus lugares. Entonces tenemos a la oradora señora Ami Muedin, que es de la Organización Internacional para la Migración. Por favor, señora Muedin, tiene la palabra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, delegates, ladies and gentlemen, and colleagues, it is an honor and a great pleasure for the International Organization for Migration to address the Permanent Forum here today, because this year's special theme on Indigenous peoples' development with culture and identity is significant to IOM, as Indigenous peoples who migrate face particular challenges with regard to their identity and culture, often being subject to great pressures to assimilate to the non-Indigenous communities which host them. In the context of development with culture and identity, it is also important to mention that the nexus between migration and development, the recognition of which has been growing in recent years, reflecting an increasing interest in the far-reaching development implications of migration flows for both home and host communities, has a particular significance for Indigenous peoples. Indeed, migration, whether internal or international, within or outside ancestral territories, often becomes a modality to ensure the survival of the traditional way of life in Indigenous territories through the transfer of remittances, among other things. As the report of the 3-day International Expert Group meeting held earlier this year notes, globalization has an impact on Indigenous peoples and compromises their lives in several respects. But globalization is also a factor facilitating the movement of peoples, including the rural-urban migration of Indigenous peoples hoping for economic development in urban centers. This move can prove extremely difficult for Indigenous communities who have to adapt their cultural practices, lifestyles, and economic expectations to fit in with their new urban locations. Issues of identity and integration are especially strenuous for certain migrant Indigenous communities, as some governments have suggested that Indigenous migrants that are no longer present in their communities or those who have assimilated to non-Indigenous societies to accommodate new realities should no longer be considered Indigenous. This loss of Indigenous identity can sometimes prevent individuals from accessing state benefits granted only to those who are recognized as Indigenous according to rigid definitions. In a broader context, international and internal migration of indigenous peoples may result in the dilution of their customs and cultures, or to the contrary, make indigenous cultures more visible through groups maintaining ties with their home communities. Special protections are necessary to relieve the pressure for assimilation that indigenous migrants might be subject to in order to avoid ethnic discrimination at the hands of the host society. Indigenous empowerment requires addressing discrimination, education, and training, as well as labor rights. Beyond special protections, promoting and encouraging cultural awareness and understanding between indigenous and non-indigenous peoples can contribute to the elimination of discrimination and exclusion. In the context of internal rural-urban migration, for instance, providing for health services and training health professionals in a culturally appropriate way and in consultation with indigenous organizations allow indigenous health practices to be recognized without diminishing indigenous people's rights to the national health system. In the same vein, guaranteeing the right to high-quality education to indigenous migrants, including the right to have the education of their cultures and histories in their own languages, is crucial for the preservation of indigenous people's cultural integrity. Mr. Chairperson, for its part, IOM is paying special attention to the protection of indigenous migrants' identity and culture and the promotion and delivery of migration-related programs. For instance, IOM's office in Colombia has based its work off of its assistance strategy for ethnic groups with a differential focus for the past several years. This strategy is embedded in this guide, defines the principal parameters for the inclusion of an ethnic focus for indigenous and Afro-Colombian communities in the identification, design, implementation, and follow-up of all related projects within IOM Colombia. It is oriented to protect the cultural and ethnic diversity of the peoples in accordance with international treaties, the Colombian Constitution, and the laws and norms in force. The principles of this differential approach are respect for life, recognition for specific characteristics of the group, identity, equity, self-determination, participation, territoriality, and affirmation of the individual. Mr. Chairperson, distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, economic challenges remain pressing issues for indigenous peoples around the world, as poverty levels among them can be double that of non-indigenous communities in some countries. Migration to more economically developed regions can be a response to these pressures, and remittances of indigenous migrant workers have become a very important source of income for many rural indigenous communities. Some indigenous peoples migrate consciously to ensure the survival of their traditional way of life in their territories, therefore preserving their identity and culture. Apart from remittances, indigenous migrants also contribute in various ways to the development of their communities. Some who have migrated and found employment are becoming increasingly active participants in their places of origin from a distance as they pay for festivals and rites, sponsor children's education, or invest in small businesses. In their host communities, some indigenous migrants have established the commercialization of indigenous arts, crafts, dances and medicines as income-generating activities to ensure their survival, thus still being able to benefit from the natural wealth of their ancestral lands. Also, we now see the emergence of programs co-sponsored by governments and foundations promoting the cultural exchange between communities of origin and host societies. The development of these programs should be further encouraged, as diaspora associations and migrant networks can play a significant role in fostering social, cultural, and commercial ties between communities. In conclusion, Mr. Chairperson, IOM looks forward to continued cooperation and collaboration with interested stakeholders engaged on migration, including on promoting the views and concerns of indigenous peoples on these matters, and hopes for a successful session of this year's Permanent Forum. Thank you.
Muchas gracias, señora Muedin. Su presentación nos lleva a pensar y a establecer que nuestros pueblos pues llevan sus culturas y mucho de lo que uno pueda enviar como concepto de sus ahorros en el lugar que trabaje ayuda evidentemente a seguir adelante con nuestros estilos de vida en nuestras respectivas comunidades. Seguidamente vamos a, en el orden de la lista que tenemos, dar la palabra al señor Gonzalo Oviedo de la Unión Internacional para la Conservación de la Naturaleza. Señor Oviedo.
start speaking.
¿No está?
El volcán.
Entonces, si no está el señor Oviedo, vamos a seguir adelante con la lista. La señora Brigitte Feiring, de la Organización Internacional del Trabajo. También preguntamos si está en la sala la señora Brigitte Feiring.
No está, hay el volcán.
Ah, tiene la palabra.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente. Señor presidente, indigenous people rights to self-determined development, to set their own priorities and to free prior informed consent are enshrined in Articles 3 and Article 32 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. The ILO is firmly committed to contributing to making these rights a reality for Indigenous peoples, including through the promotion and application of ILO Convention 169, which, among others, enshrines the right of Indigenous people to decide their own development priorities. However, most Indigenous peoples are far from enjoying these rights. Their implementation requires constitutional and legal recognition, the establishment of adequate institutions, the development of policies and programs, and the allocation of resources. Mr. Chairman, in 2009, the Permanent Forum requested the Interagency Support Group to work on indicators to monitor the situation of Indigenous peoples and the implementation of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The ILO, together with the Forum and the interagency partners, is developing the outline of a coherent monitoring framework that would help us to avoid fragmented approaches while making maximum use of existing institutionalized mechanisms. In this regard, the supervisory mechanisms of the ILO constitute a resource that the ILO is increasingly using to address the situation of Indigenous peoples all over the world, not only regarding the application of Convention 169, but also other conventions of crucial importance to Indigenous peoples, such as the ILO Conventions on Discrimination, Forced Labor, and Child Labor. In addition, on the basis of an agreement according to which the Permanent Forum can contribute to the supervision of the application of Convention 169, one member of the Permanent Forum participated in the 2009 ILO International Labour Conference. During the conference, the application of Convention 169 in Peru was discussed. Mr. Chairman, in its own efforts to support Indigenous people's self-determined development, mainly through the program to promote ILO Convention 169, from now called Pro 169, the ILO is gradually scaling up its long-term support to regional and national processes for the implementation of Indigenous people's rights. Pro 169 now has a regional program in Latin America and a number of sub-regional and country programs in Africa and Asia, mainly founded by Spain, Norway, Denmark, and the European Commission. In this context, Mr. Chairman, it is my pleasure to inform you that today the ILO has received a request for ratification of Convention 169 from the Central African Republic. The Central African Republic would become the first African country to ratify the convention, and this hopefully will inspire other African countries to do the same. In 2009, the program has been evaluated by a group of indigenous experts. The experts observe that the program builds on the ILO's unique mandate, emphasizing the important linkage between technical assistance and the standard setting role and supervisory mechanisms of the ILO. Overall, the team concluded that the program gives valuable support to the development of indigenous people and that long-term commitment is required to ensure a lasting and effective impact. In this regard, the team pointed out the vulnerability of technical assistance programs that depend on external resources, particularly in a reformed overall development context where many donors will no longer provide earmarked support to promote indigenous people's rights. Mr. Chairman, this is an important message to the multilateral system as well as for bilateral donors, whose actions are now guided by the principles of the 2005 Paris Declaration on Aid Effectiveness and the 2008 Accra Agenda for Action developed by the OECD-DAC. These principles, which aim at reducing transaction costs and fragmentation and ensuring effectiveness and sustainability of development efforts, may limit the possibilities of prioritizing funds to indigenous peoples or pushing for conditionalities linked to the respect for indigenous peoples' rights or human rights in general. Many countries and institutions still have no formal legislative or policy recognition of indigenous people's rights, and in many cases, the involvement of indigenous peoples in decision-making processes is really weak. The reformed aid architecture in itself provides no safeguards to ensure that effectiveness does not jeopardize the right-based approach to indigenous people's development. There is thus an inherent risk for further exclusion of indigenous peoples in the development process if specific safeguards and mechanisms for effective participation are not developed. Mr. Chairman, as I've said before, indigenous peoples' rights to self-determined development, to set their own priorities, to free prior informed consent and to participate in decision-making at all levels, as stipulated by the Declaration and by Convention 169, must set the standard for national policies and development cooperation. OECD-DAC members, developing countries, the UN system, and indigenous peoples have to combine their efforts in this direction and develop monitoring mechanisms that allow us to assess progress, measure impact, and raise the alarm if these standards are undermined. Muchas gracias, señor presidente.
Muchas gracias, señora representante de la OIT. Va a ser muy importante que en la región, pero también en todo el mundo, el progreso que tenga el programa 169 de la OIT para la aplicación del convenio 169. Seguidamente damos la palabra a la señora Sharon Brenn-Hailock de la Organización para la Agricultura y la Alimentación FAO. ¿Estará la señora Sharon? Tiene la palabra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I'm pleased to participate on behalf of the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, in this important dialogue. In the interest of time, I will be as brief as possible in my remarks, and I have made available in the room a longer version of this intervention. FAO's mandate is to pursue food security for those whose livelihoods are threatened by chronic poverty, scarce access to resources, environmental degradation, and other socioeconomic difficulties, including discrimination and marginalization from opportunities for production. Biological and cultural diversity are in many ways integral for food and livelihood security, and it is in this vein that work on indigenous issues is acquiring greater attention at FAO. Although the process of effectively integrating indigenous issues into development efforts still needs greater support, there's been an upward trend in recent years. Along with this increasing engagement, also comes a greater awareness of the notion of development with culture and identity. FAO fundamentally believes that development is more sustainable when it builds on skills, knowledge systems, and resources that are already present. And for this reason, FAO endeavors to respect and support local peoples and ecosystems in its work. development with culture, culture and identity is therefore present in many FAO activities. I'd like to mention three examples of FAO's work that apply the concept of development with culture and identity and highlight the important link between cultural and biological diversity. The globally important Agricultural Heritage Systems Initiative aims to reinforce the underlying ecological and socio-cultural processes that have sustained the agricultural practices of a given area and to empower smallholder communities, many of which are indigenous, to dynamically conserve these traditional agricultural systems. Currently, the initiative has activities in Peru, Chile, China, Philippines, Tunisia, Algeria, Kenya, and Tanzania. As an example, in the Peruvian Central Andes, the initiative is helping to preserve the traditional agricultural terracing system. Terraces help control land degradation and allow cultivation in steep slopes and different altitudes, factors which give local indigenous Aymara and Quechua communities the ability to continue cultivating their traditional products, including up to 177 varieties of potatoes. Another example is FAO's work with the Center for Indigenous Peoples, Nutrition and Environment with McGill University in Canada and with leaders of Indigenous communities, where we have documented 12 Indigenous food systems around the world. This work demonstrates that culturally sensitive approaches and sustainable management of natural resources can go hand in hand to create important development outcomes. In the fisheries and aquaculture sectors, increasingly, FAO's work explicitly recognizes and addresses the needs and rights of small-scale fishers and indigenous fishing communities. In 2008, FAO and the Royal Government of Thailand organized the Global Conference on Small-Scale Fisheries, Securing Sustainable Small-Scale Fisheries, Bringing Together Responsible Fisheries and Social Development. At last year's 8th session, FAO participated in an open dialogue during which it answered questions about its work on indigenous issues and clarified some of the obstacles and issues which influence this area of work. The forum made three main recommendations which FAO has addressed carefully. In 2009, FAO and the Italian Ministry of the Environment and Territory launched a joint project called Communication for Sustainable Development Initiative, CSDI, which applies communication strategies and approaches to climate change adaptation, sustainable natural resources management, and food security. Working together with indigenous people, CSDI implements communication programs and services in Africa, Asia, and Latin America and the Caribbean. In Bolivia, the initiative is currently being implemented in conjunction with indigenous organizations such as CEDAW and the Plataforma Indígena within the framework of the UN RED program. FAO is also working on elaborating improved methodologies for participatory land delimitation and titling. The approach that the FAO tends to follow is an inclusive one based on dialogue and collaborative actions among governments and indigenous communities. A draft policy, FAO policy on indigenous and tribal peoples, was developed in close consultation with members of FAO's Working Group on Indigenous Issues and with significant contributions from indigenous peoples and indigenous organizations. At the moment, the policy is in the process of final clearance. And finally, two other points I'd like to make. In November 2009, in parallel to the World Summit on Food Security, representatives of indigenous peoples from all regions convened an indigenous caucus within the People's Forum for Food Sovereignty. FAO representatives were invited to discuss various issues with members of the caucus. This open dialogue was received positively by all participants. One of the newest developments, which holds significant implications for the political representation of indigenous people at the peoples at the international level, is the reform of the Committee on World Food Security. The recent reform aims at making CFS the foremost inclusive international and intergovernmental platform dealing with food security and nutrition. Indigenous peoples' organizations can play a significant role in the new CFS. civil society organizations and NGOs are expected to submit to the CFS Bureau a proposal regarding how they intend to organize their participation in the CFS in a way that ensures broad and balanced participation by regions and types of organizations. This is an important opportunity for Indigenous peoples and civil society more broadly, and it is FAO's hope that they will be able to form a united representative front within this reformed committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Muchas gracias, señora. Ahora daremos paso a los distinguidos. Repito, ahora damos paso a los distinguidos miembros del foro permanente, profesor Bartolomé Clavero y luego la señora Elisa Kanki. Entonces, la señora Elisa Kanki, por favor.
Thank you, señor presidente. A distinguidos colegas del foro permanente, hermanos y hermanas. Simplemente yo quisiera complementar el informe de la reunión de expertos y poner en la mesa de discusión de este foro la visión de desarrollo de los pueblos indígenas, plasmada como falsamente traducida o relacionada como desarrollo en marco de conceptos manejados. El vivir bien es la visión que a los pueblos indígenas nos ha permitido llegar, pese a las condiciones adversas, pese a que nos tipifican que somos los culpables del subdesarrollo de muchos países. El vivir bien debe ser el paradigma que fundamente el desarrollo de los pueblos indígenas. El paradigma basado en el respeto y la armonía con la naturaleza, el fortalecimiento de la identidad de los pueblos indígenas, el disfrute de los bienes materiales, el reconocimiento de la vida en comunidad y el acceso a la práctica de la espiritualidad. Estos valores, basados en principios y fundamentados a la relación de complementariedad que los pueblos indígenas que a lo largo de su vida practican, complementariedad basada en el respeto a los otros. ¿Cómo sentirse bien si la otra persona de al lado no se encuentra bien? Es el principio básico del vivir bien de los pueblos indígenas. Creo que también es importante en este foro reconocer el esfuerzo que hacen los gobiernos de Bolivia y Ecuador en plasmar esta visión del vivir bien en sus sistemas de planificación. Sistemas de planificación que posteriormente darán a unos indicadores diferenciados de vivir bien de los pueblos indígenas en ambos países. Por otro lado, también me quisiera referir al informe presentado por Rebeca del PNUD, ante su preocupación de por qué los informes de desarrollo del milenio invisibilizan a los pueblos indígenas, de por qué los informes de los estados no hacen nada que pueda reportar el estado de situación de los pueblos indígenas. Simplemente estamos ausentes de estos informes. Los sistemas de recopilación de datos no reflejan la realidad de los pueblos indígenas. Entonces, una atención a todos los sistemas de información que utiliza tanto los gobiernos como el mismo sistema para poder visibilizar a los pueblos indígenas. Porque ahí realmente y nuevamente confirmarían el estado precario los cuales los pueblos indígenas viven. No estamos en los informes y en los reportes porque simplemente estamos fuera de la meta que los países se han trazado para el 2015. No somos parte de esas acciones. Y creo que es importante que en la reunión de septiembre el plan de acción contemple un componente específico para pueblos indígenas y los objetivos de desarrollo del milenio. Ya este foro ha recomendado en su oportunidad que se cambien los indicadores, que se ajusten los indicadores. Sin embargo, no hemos tenido respuesta alguna. Esperamos una reacción favorable, no solamente de este foro plasmada en recomendaciones, esperamos una reacción favorable de parte de los responsables del proyecto de los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio del Sistema de Naciones Unidas. Es tiempo no solo hablar de participación en procesos de consulta, en talleres, es hora de hacer acciones específicas que realmente reflejen que se está trabajando en favor de los pueblos indígenas. Gracias.
Muchas gracias, señora Elisa Canqui. Por favor, pedimos al profesor Clavero que haga su intervención.
Señor presidente, quería hacer algún comentario también al informe del PNUD y también al informe de la Organización Internacional del Trabajo. El informe del PNUD me estaba haciendo recordar que en el seno del foro discutimos mucho en su momento sobre cómo presentar el tema de este año, porque nos parecía que todas las expresiones se quedaban insuficientes y que incluso desarrollo con cultura e identidad no expresaba de forma suficiente lo que queríamos decir. Y la solución fue fácil al cabo. Añadimos artículos 3 y 32 de la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, que creo que es lo importante. Declaración con cultura e identidad se puede interpretar de forma que no respete el derecho a la libre determinación ni el derecho a las opciones sobre su propio desarrollo de los pueblos indígenas. Y me ha recordado esto el informe del PNUD porque sigo viendo problemas en la forma como entiende el desarrollo y el desarrollo humano. En los últimos 20 años, los informes sobre desarrollo humano, al menos en América Latina, no han tomado en cuenta los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, no consultan con los pueblos indígenas y no atienden a las opciones sobre el desarrollo de los pueblos indígenas. Es cierto, y esto es apreciable, que han hecho visible culturas indígenas y que incluso contemplan las culturas indígenas desde el punto de vista de la libertad de quienes profesan esas culturas o tienen esas culturas, pero de la libertad de la gente en singular, de people en singular, no de la libertad de los pueblos. Una cosa es la visibilidad y la libertad de las culturas y otra cosa muy distinta es la visibilidad y la libertad de los pueblos indígenas que tienen el derecho a su propia cultura y a las opciones correspondientes y en particular respecto al desarrollo. Por esto aprecio el contraste del informe de la Organización Internacional del Trabajo, que ha comenzado acentuando esas referencias a los artículos de la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, marcando mejor la novedad que ha traído la declaración, en vez de intentar mantener planteamientos anteriores a la declaración y que no acaban de responder a ella, como son los planteamientos del desarrollo humano que sigue utilizando el PNUD. Y también me ha satisfecho, y con esto concluyo, el recuerdo que ha tenido la Organización Internacional del Trabajo, que está también en su informe por escrito, respecto a la participación de un miembro del foro, que hoy todavía no está aquí porque está retenido en Noruega por la nube de ceniza que recorre Europa. La participación de ese miembro del foro en la reunión del 2009 de la Comisión de Aplicación de Normas de la Asamblea Internacional del Trabajo, y ha recordado sobre el caso del Perú, que durante el año 2009 es el caso de América Latina en el que más sistemáticamente se ha estado atropellando el derecho de los pueblos indígenas a su propio desarrollo. Es importante que recordemos estas cosas y que las recordemos sobre todo para ir superando concepciones, prácticas, políticas internacionales del Grupo de Desarrollo, de las Agencias de Naciones Unidas y, en particular, del Programa de las Naciones Unidas para el Desarrollo, que no acaban de responder a las exigencias de la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Nada más. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias, Bartolomé. Vamos a proseguir con la presentación de nuestros colegas del foro permanente. Sin embargo, quisiera antes mencionar que sentimos la ausencia de representantes de organismos internacionales, de colegas nuestros que no acaban de llegar o ni siquiera acaban de partir seguramente, y muchos delegados de pueblos indígenas por el asunto del volcán, que entre bromas decían es la reacción de la madre tierra, y capaz que eso sea cierto también, ¿no? Entonces, por favor, mi hermana Tonia Gonella.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you recognizing me. Mr. Chairman, I would like to respond to the report that was given earlier by our distinguished colleague, Victoria, on the report of the International Expert Group meeting. I would like to reiterate a couple of points, and in particular, one point that Victoria brought to our attention, which is quite important, and that is it is important that Indigenous peoples contribute to the work of the Special Representative of the Secretary General on the issue of human rights and transnational corporations and other business enterprises to advance a special framework of human rights for Indigenous peoples in its work. Victoria pointed out to us that the Special Representative is working with a framework that consists of three pillars, and I would concur with her that those three pillars include Indigenous peoples and our human rights. And also that the United Nations entities, academia, media, Indigenous peoples should create collaborative research evaluation and monitoring processes and projects at the local, national, and global levels to influence thinking and decision-making in the key areas related to development, including capacity building, planning, monitoring, and evaluation, and additionally, the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues adopt a code of conduct for such entities regarding research in Indigenous communities. Victoria brought this up in her noting of the recommendations that were brought forward by the expert group meeting, and I would concur with her recommendations. In addition, our colleague Elisa Kunki recently just mentioned a few minutes ago that the paradigm for development should be applied with the Living Well standard. And that is a paradigm that I think we all concur with. And additionally, I would suggest very strongly that the permanent forum continue the ongoing reportage of the state of the world's indigenous peoples, certainly with a second volume. I'd like to thank the distinguished representative of UNESCO, who reported on, as a representative of the 14 other members of the Interagency Support Group on the importance of the use of disaggregated data for information collecting when it comes to indigenous peoples. Indigenous delegates have been saying over and over how important that is when it comes to information gathering on our issues. And also the distinguished representative from UNDP, when she brought forward information concerning the tyranny of averages that hurts indigenous peoples and how disaggregated data will help address that tyranny, and I think we would all agree with her. And I would also like to thank the distinguished representatives from the ILO and FAO for their excellent reports. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Muchas gracias, Tania. Respecto a sus palabras y de la colega Elisa Kanki, creo que, si bien voy a reiterar, pero hemos tenido importantes avances en cuanto a la aplicación del paradigma Vivir Bien. Son parte de textos constitucionales en América del Sur, particularmente en la región de los Andes, en Bolivia, y en el Ecuador. El plan de gobierno de la República del Ecuador justamente se llama Para Vivir Bien, y lo mismo también ha ocurrido con el concepto de Madre Tierra. Entonces, estoy seguro que en el diálogo que nos lleve durante estas dos semanas vamos a tocar este tema y ver también cuál ha sido la aplicación en el caso del gobierno de Bolivia cuando hablemos o tratemos el tema de la del pueblo guaraní. Seguramente que vamos a tener informes bastante importantes respecto a la aplicación del paradigma Vivir Bien. Vamos a seguir con la lista de oradores. Damos la palabra a la señora Luz Ángela Melo, de Fondo de las Naciones Unidas para la Población. Pregunto si... Ahí está. Entonces, tiene la palabra señora Melo.
Mr. Chairperson, distinguished members of the forum, dear friends. Global demands for goods and services, growing populations, accelerated internal international migration, and ruthless exploitation are putting increased pressures on the lands and territories of indigenous peoples and on their cultures. Finding a sustainable human rights solution between these challenges and indigenous people's human rights to well-being and development, it's a task that needs to be addressed with as a matter of urgency. UNFPA strongly believes that the subjects of culture, human rights, and development are interlinked for indigenous peoples. Thus, when addressing indigenous people's issues, including indigenous women's rights, to advance human rights can become an empty exercise and a rhetorical stand if cultural diversity and identity are not taken into account into support programs, national dialogues, and policies with a new development paradigm. Therefore, UNFPA believes that the 9th session of the Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues and its theme is a unique opportunity for this discussion, and that from it, a firm consensus that indigenous people's visions and perspectives of development are a key contribution to the revisiting of the dominant development paradigm that the states and the international community have been urged to make. Mr. Chairperson, overall progress towards the Millennium Development Goals has been encouraging. Nonetheless, there are frequently wide gaps between national averages and the situation of indigenous peoples, and particularly indigenous women. But there is insufficient information to assess those gaps. The data that exists illustrates that indigenous peoples are materially poorer, have less income, have poorer physical health, and less formal education than non-indigenous populations, and that indigenous women have higher maternal and infant mortality rates than women and girls in general. As the categories become more specific, qualitative information and data on indigenous peoples, and particularly on indigenous women, become thinner. Thus, without data, proper progress of targets cannot be assessed, policymaking is blank and gender blind, and the results are weakened, non-specific, with less relevant public policies and development plans. In response to this lacuna and to the Permanent Forum's recommendation on information and knowledge generation, management and dissemination, UNFPA, in collaboration with other UN agencies such as ECLAC, UNIFEM, UNDP, and PAHO, has been carrying out a systematic effort since 2007 to include indigenous peoples' issues as a key theme in the 2010 round of population and housing censuses, as the cases of Peru, Cambodia, El Salvador, and Vietnam reveal, and preparations in Belize, Ecuador, Brazil, and Panama portray. In Latin America, UNFPA has partnered with the Economic Commission for the Latin American and the Caribbean, ECLAC, for the analysis of the situation of indigenous peoples of the Americas. In the Asia-Pacific, a comprehensive report on the reproductive health of ethnic minority groups in the greater Mekong subregion, covering Lao People's Democratic Republic, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, and the Yunnan province in China, provided valuable data needed for examining barriers to access to information and social and health services. Mr. Chairperson, UNFPA acknowledges that intercultural human rights approaches to sexual and reproductive health respond to the need of ensuring that indigenous peoples, and more particularly indigenous women, have the right to sexual and reproductive health respected, protected, and fulfilled by preserving their notions of well-being and disease associated with their worldviews and to their specific notions of birth and child rearing. Providing effective health services, including sexual reproductive health services, often depends on the ability of medical and social services to incorporate cultural understandings, perceptions, and practices. But it is more than that, in fact. It acknowledges that the ways in which indigenous peoples understand the world are essential to their identity, and therefore, development policies should reflect and reinforce them. Maternal mortality, as said before, affecting more indigenous women than non-indigenous women, is a very complex phenomenon, for instance, that is related to financial economic barriers, geographical isolation, gender and cultural factors, and insufficient culturally relevant quality services. Within a dialogue among cultures, designing and implementing intercultural reproductive health models implies that health providers and managers are not only called to provide the best quality and coverage of reproductive services for indigenous women, from a conventional point of view, but to include in these services those non-negotiable cultural elements or practices which will permit an indigenous woman and her family to identify and keep traditional knowledge and practices and to be comfortable with these services. UNFPA is supporting national efforts to develop sexual reproductive health models that are producing important lessons for scaling up interventions at different levels and in different regions. South-South cooperation strategies among countries in Latin America and the Caribbean region are becoming driving forces in accelerating public policy design and implementation. Mr. Chairperson, we would like to inform that UNFPA is currently working towards the corporate adoption of a strategy to support indigenous peoples' issues and will convene a global consultation with members of the Permanent Forum, civil society representatives, and other colleagues towards that end. Finally, we would like to take this opportunity to express our thanks to the former chairperson, Mrs. Victoria Tauli Corpus, who, along with other honorable members of the Permanent Forum, has been very important in supporting UNFPA efforts in mainstreaming indigenous issues. We also want to warmly welcome you as new chairperson and wish you the best in such an important task. Last but not least, to our dear colleague and friend, Elsa Stamatopoulos, who has been by far one of the most generous intellects we have ever known. She has helped us, me and my colleagues, to better understand indigenous issues and to better integrate them into our common efforts for advancing human rights and development. She has been a fine example of humbleness, intelligence, and dedication. We hope that from other battlefields, she will continue helping UNFPA in its efforts to support indigenous peoples and indigenous women. Dear Elsa, all the best. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Muchas gracias. Quisiera, antes de dar la palabra a la siguiente oradora, mencionar que nos queda muy poco tiempo y todavía tenemos una larga lista de oradores. Y entonces solicito que se compadezcan con el tiempo que tenemos y discúlpenme por esta situación a los señores representantes de los organismos que hoy nos acompañan. Entonces vamos a dar la palabra a la señora Tricia Reedy del Instituto de las Naciones Unidas para la Investigación y el Entrenamiento. Señora Reedy.
No está, porque viene de Ginebra.
Ah, no. Me dice la secretaria que ella viene de Ginebra, entonces otra vez el volcán. Pasamos a la... Ah, ya. Entonces, señora, usted tiene la palabra.
Thank you. UNITAR is pleased to participate in this ninth session of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, and I'd like to say I was very lucky to arrive a day early, and I'm very pleased to be here from Geneva. The UNITAR training program to enhance the conflict prevention and peace-building capacities of Indigenous peoples' representatives was created in 2000 based on the requests of Indigenous representatives for strengthened capacities in the resolution of conflict and on the recommendation of UN Special Rapporteurs to enhance Indigenous abilities to engage in negotiation and intercultural dialogue with partners at multiple levels. The program provides advanced training for Indigenous representatives in conflict analysis, negotiation, and conflict transformation, coupled with information on UN and regional human rights mechanisms to further the promotion and protection of their rights. As marginalization from political and economic processes and conflict over land and resource issues are two of the most challenging areas Indigenous peoples continue to face, the majority of cases and negotiation simulations focus on these. The program reviews both rights-based and problem-solving negotiation processes to strengthen the capacities of Indigenous representatives to analyze root causes of conflict and engage in negotiation and intercultural dialogue with governments, the private sector, and other communities to address the priorities of their communities and resolve conflict in a mutually beneficial and sustainable manner, a manner that promotes well-being while preserving identity and culture. The training program invites UN Special Rapporteurs and Permanent Forum members and other senior Indigenous experts to conduct sessions on successful negotiation processes, on land and resource issues, and on political participation. senior Indigenous experts present on UN and international conventions, mechanisms, and policies that promote and protect human rights and facilitate dialogue among concerned parties. The program actively seeks the participation and contribution of Indigenous women, both as resource persons and participants. In the most recent regional training program for Indigenous representatives of the Pacific, held in Australia last August, women composed 62% of participants, including a paramount chief, an attorney general, a traditional chief, presidents of provincial and national women's councils, advisors, and other leaders and practitioners. Male participants included two traditional chiefs, advocates, managers, and community workers. We were most pleased to have the opportunity for a dialogue with the UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights of Indigenous People, Professor James Anaya, who has contributed to each of the 12 UNITAR training programs, both at the international and regional levels. We also appreciated the important contribution of UN Permanent Forum member, Professor Mick Dodson, to the regional training program. We are grateful to the governments of Denmark, Finland, and Sweden for making the 2009 regional training program for the Pacific possible. 374 representatives from around the world have been trained to date. Two alumni have served or been nominated as expert members of the Permanent Forum, and one alumna serves as a member of the UN Expert Mechanism. Three graduates taught in the regional training for the Pacific. A Maori treaty claims negotiator, an Aboriginal senior university lecturer, and an environmental specialist from Fiji. Indigenous representatives are working effectively at multiple levels to communicate needs, concerns, and aspirations, and engage in dialogue with partners to forge mutually beneficial solutions to challenges. Funding support is being sought to organize the 2010 International Training Program for Indigenous Representatives from around the world in July in Geneva, at the time of the UN Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. UNITAR contributes to the Interagency Support Group and UN efforts to promote the increased effective involvement of Indigenous peoples in decision-making and development processes at multiple levels, and looks forward to continuing to work with the Permanent Forum and other Indigenous experts and partners to contribute to the realization of peace, security, and well-being for the Indigenous peoples of the world. Thank you.
Gracias, señora Reedy. Ahora daremos la palabra al señor Werner Obermeier, de la Organización Mundial de la Salud. Señor Obermeier, tenemos en la sala. Por favor, señor Obermeier.
Gracias, señor presidente. Let me welcome all participants here today and assure you how pleased the World Health Organization is to have an opportunity to address this ninth session of the Permanent Forum. As you may be aware, WHO regards health as not merely the absence of disease, but a state of complete physical and mental well-being. And so, the health status and living conditions of Indigenous peoples, which are invariably below those of the general population in countries all over the world, is of great concern to us. Many illnesses suffered are associated with lifestyle changes resulting from land displacement and acculturation. One of the main threats, not only to health but the very survival of Indigenous peoples, is the destruction of their habitat, which provides spiritual and material sustenance. The loss of cultural cohesion can have a very negative impact on health, and therefore we applaud the focus this year on development with culture and identity as the theme of the forum. Mr. Chairman, attention to Indigenous health issues permeates throughout all the work of WHO in all our health programs. Let me just briefly touch on two areas in line with your request to be brief. You may recall that some years ago we initiated here in this forum a collaboration on combating tuberculosis. This top TB partnership, in collaboration with all our departments in Geneva is now doing an analysis of epidemiological data in several countries in order to gather more evidence of the burden of this disease in indigenous populations. This should pave the way to specific actions to address those that are at higher risk and involve and empower civil society organizations in the planning, implementation, and evaluation of TB control. The involvement of indigenous populations in these initiatives should not only ensure their active engagement, but also improve access to quality services, health services, and involve community support for people affected by tuberculosis. Tobacco use is another important risk factor for the health of indigenous peoples because of the usually very high rates that affect them. There is also evidence of higher death rates from tobacco-caused diseases. And so we attempt to pursue holistic interventions, which is tied to social determinants and benefit both the development aspect as well as the health of indigenous peoples. Progress in reducing health inequities faced by indigenous peoples will only be made if communities are engaged in and lead the process of healing and revitalization. The WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control is one of the most widely embraced treaties in the United Nations history, and it recognizes, I quote, the need to take measures to promote the participation of indigenous individuals and communities in the development, implementation, and evaluation of tobacco control programs that are socially and culturally appropriate to their needs and perspectives. And so this forum can help us to raise the awareness of the problem of tobacco use and engage all our partners and other UN agencies in the process of change. We hope that if this forum could adopt or promote a declaration to recognize the importance of this problem, it can help kick off concerted action on this problem. Let me finally inform you that WHO will have the opportunity to host the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Issues in September from the 15th to the 17th in Geneva. And we are very honored to have this opportunity, and we are hopeful it can strengthen all our work together jointly to promote indigenous health. Thank you.
Muchas gracias, señor. Quisiera nuevamente solicitarles que podamos ser generosos con el uso del tiempo. Quisiera sugerir si pudiéramos tomar a 4 minutos para terminar en la jornada nuestro diálogo con las agencias. Vamos a dar la palabra a la señora Yamina Yacta, del Programa de las Naciones Unidas para la Vivienda, un hábitat. Señora Dachta, tiene la palabra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, and I shall be very brief. Mr. Chairperson, distinguished member of the Permanent Forum, distinguished delegates, distinguished representative of indigenous people, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. UN Habitat mandate is to work towards improving living conditions, ensuring adequate shelter for all, and contributing to sustainable human settlements development while focusing on the needs of the poor and other vulnerable and disadvantaged groups, including indigenous people. And that represents a clear position on the rights of indigenous people of the agency. The Habitat Agenda, Millennium Development Goals, and other relevant international instruments and frameworks related to spatial, economic, and social development, as well as human rights, provide guidance to UN Habitat's work. also recent resolutions from the Governing Council of UN Habitat make particular reference to challenges faced by indigenous communities in the urban context and represent the most recent policy statements. UN Habitat has several instruments, programs, projects, and activities that are of direct relevance to indigenous people. And of this, for the sake of time, I wouldn't dwell on them. But to say also that UN Habitat provides technical assistance and elaborates policy guidelines for government and local authorities to assist in the development of public policies related to the challenges faced by indigenous people in cities. I would like just to highlight the policy guide to housing for indigenous people, which was launched at the annual meeting of Interagency Support Group on Indigenous People held from 28 to 30 September 2009 in Nairobi. UN Habitat is also working with partners to develop other urban policy guide, including guide on urban land. Now I would like to just focus on the paper, the Interagency Support Group paper on development, culture, and identity. UN Habitat has actively contributed to the paper and highlighted the urban perspective of development with culture and identity in the paper, in the document. Thanks to the generous support from the Canadian and French government, a roundtable was organized at the fifth session of the World Urban Forum on the 23rd March 2010 in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, about indigenous people, sustainable urban development with culture and identity. The discussions and presentations made during the roundtable highlighted the challenges facing indigenous people in urban areas, but also indigenous people's rich contribution to the urban fabric and urban diversity. UN Habitat also launched, during the fifth session of the World Urban Forum, the eighth report of the UN Housing Right Program, entitled Urban Indigenous Peoples and Migration, a Review of Policies, Programs, and Practices. Mr. Chairman, based on this work to face the challenges of urbanization and to contribute to improve the living conditions of indigenous peoples in cities, UN Habitat, thanks to the continued support from the Government of Canada, is looking forward to strengthen its partnership with the Permanent Forum, the indigenous communities worldwide, and the UN system towards the improvement of living conditions of indigenous people in urban areas and towards sustainable urban development with culture and identity. I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Muchas gracias. Por favor, la señora Susana Schuttengen, de la Organización de las Naciones Unidas para la Educación, Cultura, Ciencia y Cultura. Por favor, tiene la palabra.
Thank you. As we mentioned this earlier this afternoon in the joint interagency paper, UNESCO has developed different standard-setting instruments in the area of culture. And the two most recent ones are the Convention for the Safeguarding of Intangible Heritage from 2003 and the Convention on the Protection and Promotion of the Diversity of Cultural Expressions. And I just, since these are very important international normative instruments, I just wanted to inform those who are not yet so familiar with them that, in fact, for both of these, the first one, Convention for the Safeguarding of Intangible Heritage, which is about safeguarding knowledge systems, including indigenous people's knowledge systems, that input from indigenous peoples was received, and that it's that they are explicitly acknowledging indigenous peoples, and also that this Convention on the Safeguarding of Intangible Heritage has a provision for community. It's actually the communities, the holders of the traditional of the intangible heritage, that are defining what it is. I think this is important because I've seen in several documents information that is not correct about these conventions. So it is really an important one for indigenous peoples, and I invite everybody to look at the UNESCO website and see how maybe you can get involved. There's also, as for the Convention on the Protection and Promotion of the Diversity of Cultural Expressions, indigenous peoples, again, are explicitly mentioned and their contribution to sustainable development valorized. And also, there is an article that invites governments to create the conditions where this diversity, also the diversity of cultural expressions of indigenous peoples, can flourish. So it is very important. This one is in particular about cultural expressions as they are circulated through film, cinema, through the cultural industries, basically. The last point I want to make is that the International Year on the Rapprochement of Culture also emphasizes indigenous knowledge and knowledge systems and their importance in the dialogue among culture, in particular the dialogue, the intercultural dialogue for sustainable development. So if you are interested, I invite you to go to the UNESCO website and share, contribute how you as indigenous peoples, organizations, if you have interesting experience on intercultural dialogue in this area, to share it there. The website is on the UNESCO website, and you just have to look for the International Year on the Rapprochement of Cultures. Last not but least, I will not repeat for the sake of time what my colleague Luz Mello from UNFPA has said about Vicky's contribution to our work, Elsa's, and now welcoming Carlos. And I really want to echo that, that their contribution, the contribution of Vicky Talikopoulos and Elsa Stamatopoulos, have been exceptional, and we will nurture further what you created with us.
Ahora damos la palabra a la señora Andrea Carmen, que hará una declaración conjunta entre el Consejo de Tratados Indios y el Fondo Internacional de las Naciones Unidas para la Agricultura y el Desarrollo. Señora Carmen, por favor, tiene la palabra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a joint statement on behalf of the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization and the International Indian Treaty Council. Beginning in 2007 at the sixth session of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, we provided updates on our collaborative work to develop, define, and implement the cultural indicators for food security, food sovereignty, and sustainable development. This work has been carried out based on the recognition by Indigenous peoples as well as by UN FAO that cultural indicators were previously the missing pillar in international policies on sustainable development, including food security. The progress of this work has been presented in a range of UN fora and sessions, including three of the regional seminars organized by the Permanent Forum addressing the development of indicators of well-being for Indigenous peoples, as well as at sessions of the UN Human Rights Council, the CBD, and others. The cultural indicators were completed at the second global consultation on the right to food, food security, and food sovereignty for Indigenous peoples in 2006 in Bilwi, Nicaragua. They provide a framework and practical tool for Indigenous peoples to assess and measure the positive and negative effects of programs, methods, and technologies coming from outside their communities and environmental impacts such as mining, deforestation, pesticide use, and climate change, as well as the resiliency of traditional practices and methods and their transmission to new generations. They develop the links between human rights, including self-determination, free, prior, and informed consent, treaty rights, access to traditional lands and resources, and the relationship between cultural and biological diversity. They are also intended to be used as a framework and tool by UN agencies and bodies, development institutions, states, and NGOs to assess their programs, initiatives, and projects impacting food security of indigenous peoples on the local, regional, national, and international levels. From October 2007 to February 2010, the IITC, in conjunction with a number of indigenous communities and organizations, carried out a field testing program to present, disseminate, provide training, and apply the cultural indicators to issues of priority concern to the participating communities. Over 450 indigenous representatives from 66 indigenous communities and peoples in five countries and territories, Mexico, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Canada, the U.S., and Alaska, participated in 10 workshops focusing on implementing the cultural indicators. Many participants were designated representatives of indigenous organizations and communities, so the response of the 216 participants who completed and submitted evaluation questionnaires reflected the reported input of a total of 10,085 community members. Throughout this field testing phase, the cultural indicators consistently demonstrated their utility as a useful method for indigenous peoples to discuss, assess, and measure the positive and negative impacts of programs, projects, and technologies coming from both inside and outside of their communities, and to focus special attention on areas of most urgent concern. They also provided a starting point for collective discussions which led or contributed to the development of a number of community-based initiatives to respond to threats and strengthen traditional systems and practices. These included a traditional seed bank in northern Mexico, a tribal school project for transmission of traditional knowledge in Alaska, and a national campaign to oppose the introduction of GMO foods in Guatemala, among others. To briefly summarize some of the responses, 96% of the respondents reported that the issue of food sovereignty or food security was either very important or important to their communities. 91% of the respondents participating said that the cultural indicators had either a very significant or a significant impact in their community. Finally, 93% of the respondents said that their community will continue to use or is planning to use the cultural indicators in the future. A detailed report containing all of the responses, as well as an assessment, outcomes, and key lessons learned from the field testing process, has been submitted jointly by the UN FAO and IITC to this session of the UN Permanent Forum as a conference room paper and can be found on the webpage under documents of this session. In closing, IITC and UN FAO express our sincere appreciation to the UN Permanent Forum for their continued interest and support of this initiative. We also recommend and request, one, that the UN Permanent Forum take note of the results of this collaborative program undertaken jointly by a UN agency and IITC in its report on this session, and voice support for such collaborative efforts between indigenous organizations and UN agencies. And two, that the UN Permanent Forum recommend that members of the Interagency Support Group, UN member states, and agencies incorporate and apply the cultural indicators in assessing programs and policies which serve and impact indigenous peoples, beginning with the principle of free, prior, and informed consent. For all our relations, thank you.
Muchas gracias, señora Carmen. Hubo una pequeña confusión. Había anunciado que la presentación de la señora Carmen sería con el representante del Fondo Internacional de las Naciones Unidas para la Agricultura y el Desarrollo, que no es así, sino que recién daremos la palabra al señor Jean-Philippe Audinel, que sí es el representante del Fondo Internacional de las Naciones Unidas para la Agricultura y el Desarrollo. Tiene la palabra, señor Philippe. ¿Está, señor Philippe? Está. Tiene la palabra.
Mr. Chairman, distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of IFAD, let me first congratulate you, Mr. Chair, for your election as chair of this session of the Forum, and also pay tribute to your predecessor, Victoria Tauli Corpus, who play a key role in helping IFAD to mainstream Indigenous peoples' issues in our works. We applaud the Permanent Forum for focusing this ninth session on the theme of development with culture and identity. Development for us is a human, people-centered endeavor. We have learned over time, working with rural poor people, that if development is to be sustainable, inclusive, and equitable, if it is simply to be effective for the poor, it must be shaped by the identity, values, and culture of local communities. And this is obviously particularly true for Indigenous peoples and for ethnic minorities facing marginalization, dispossession, or discrimination. Mr. Chair, last year at the eighth session of the Forum, we had the opportunity to engage in an in-depth dialogue with the Forum, and we announced the preparation of an IFAD policy on engagement with Indigenous peoples. This policy has been approved by all members of our Executive Board this last September. The policy sets out the principle of engagement that IFAD applies in its work with Indigenous people. These principles are consistent with international standards, in particular the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and the UNDG guidelines. Let me quote a few of these principles, starting with the one directly related to the theme of this forum, cultural heritage and identity as assets. I quote, "In enabling poor rural people, in particular Indigenous people and ethnic minorities, to overcome poverty, IFAD will acknowledge and build upon the assets of their cultural distinctiveness. It will assist communities in taking full advantage of their traditional knowledge, culture, governance systems, and natural resource, all of which form part of their tangible and intangible heritage." Let me quote also a very important principle, free, prior, and informed consent. "In working with member states," I quote, "on projects targeting or affecting Indigenous people, IFAD shall support the participation of Indigenous peoples' communities in determining priorities and strategies for their own development. When appraising such projects proposed by member states, in particular those that may affect the land and resource of Indigenous peoples, the fund shall examine whether the borrower or grant recipient consulted with Indigenous peoples to obtain their free, prior, and informed consent. The fund shall consider this consultation and consent as a criterion for project approval." Here I call upon governments of IFAD member countries who approved all this policy to help us comply with this very principle. This is becoming increasingly relevant and important today as we witness all over the world growing commercial pressure on land and natural resources. This policy, Mr. Chair, is a milestone for us. However, we are well aware of the challenge ahead in implementing it and ensuring that its principle and instrument are translated into action. And we invite all of you to attend a side event we are organizing this Wednesday, 21st April, when we will present and discuss the implementation of this policy. As one instrument to help us complying with the policy, we plan to establish at IFAD an Indigenous Peoples Forum in consultation with representatives of Indigenous Peoples Organization. This forum would be a process of dialogue and consultation between representatives of Indigenous people, particularly those with whom we are working in the field, IFAD staff and member states, to examine the way we work together at field level. We hope this forum will become an instrument to promote compliance with this policy and the accountability of IFAD vis-à-vis indigenous peoples with whom we are working. Another instrument for implementing this policy is a small facility, the Indigenous Peoples Assistance Facility, that allows us to build direct partnership with grassroots indigenous communities and organizations and finance through small grants their own self-development project based on their needs, priorities, and identities. In 2009, the facility funded 41 of these micro-projects in 33 countries around the world. We are working on linking this micro-project with our larger regular program. And just to remember that in 2009 alone, IFAD provided about $114 million in loans and grants supporting development of indigenous peoples. Mr. Chair, development with culture and identity happens when people are able to embrace and celebrate their diversity, build and manage their institution, and determine and shape their own future. We are convinced that by complying with the principle this forum has been promoting over years, government and international institutions and our own organization can better support and protect the self-determined development of indigenous peoples. Finally, and as I close, Mr. Chair, I would like to pay tribute to Mrs. Elsa Stamatopoulos, Chief of the Secretariat of the Forum, for her tireless work, commitment, and inspiration for all of us. We wish her all the best. I thank you for your attention.
Muchas gracias por sus anuncios, señor Odiniel. Conocemos el compromiso de IFAD con los pueblos indígenas, de lo que estamos muy agradecidos. Seguidamente daremos la palabra al señor Daniel Seynor, del Fondo de las Naciones Unidas para la Infancia. Señor Seynor tiene la palabra.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairperson, distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, Indigenous representatives, delegates, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure to address the Permanent Forum. UNICEF continues to mainstream Indigenous peoples' issues within a human rights-based approach in the context of its medium-term strategic plan. And to that end, we recently carried out a stocktaking of our work on Indigenous issues. That study revealed that UNICEF's processes, methods, and tools for managing programs and projects with Indigenous peoples need to get better, that we can do considerably better, and that our staff need stronger capacity for adapting and applying these processes and tools to particular field settings. Again, one size does not fit all. UNICEF intends to address the issues identified by the study through the roadmap and action proposal it developed during a consultation in New York in April 2009. This consultation brought together staff from UNICEF offices around the world, as well as experts from other UN agencies, including experts from the Permanent Forum. The objective of this meeting was to help strengthen UNICEF's understanding of and to establish a stronger framework for its work on both Indigenous and on minority issues, as well as to ensure that within that framework, cultural diversity is fully integrated and mainstreamed. UNICEF would like to thank the Permanent Forum for its recommendations, and we remain committed to working towards their implementation in line with our mission statement. To this end, UNICEF would like to share that our Regional Office for Latin America and the Caribbean is developing a study on the prevalence and causes of suicide among Indigenous youth. Furthermore, in May, Flaxo Ecuador and UNICEF will publish and distribute a study on migration and Indigenous children in Latin America. Mr. Chairperson, members of the Permanent Forum, in relation specifically to this year's theme, UNICEF recognizes culture as fundamental to implementation of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. Article 30 of that convention recognizes the right of Indigenous children to enjoy their culture, practice their own religion, and use their traditional languages together with other members of their group. Furthermore, Article 8 of that convention provides for the right of the child to preserve his or her identity, and that includes both cultural and administrative components of identity. I think we all appreciate here how much the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is an invaluable tool for us to progress in realizing the rights of Indigenous children and adolescents. But Indigenous children and adolescents cannot claim rights they are not aware of. So to this end, UNICEF is currently developing with our partners child and adolescent-friendly versions of the Declaration, and it's anticipated that these publications will be launched later this year. Our ambition should not be to work for the rights of Indigenous children and adolescents, but rather to work with them to realise those rights. We look forward to continue working with you to address the particular needs and promote the human rights of Indigenous children and adolescents. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Muchas gracias, señor. Tenemos la última participación. El señor Daniel, señor Scott, del Convenio sobre la Diversidad Biológica. Por favor, señor Scott.
Good afternoon, Permanent Forum members. I'd like to congratulate our new chairperson. We have a significant historical change. This is the first time we've had a chairperson from the Latin American region, and it's very good to see. Of course, I also want to thank Vicky Talikorpas, who has led us for the last 5 years and has been a wonderful support to me in my work on biological and cultural diversity. I would also like to take this moment to thank Elsa Stamatopoulou. This is her last session of the Permanent Forum, and she has put the very bedrock together that this forum has been based on for the last 10 years of her life, and deserves to be congratulated for that. Also, I would like to thank Mr. Julian Berger from the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, who unfortunately is not here, but after many years, more than 20 years working on Indigenous issues, Mr. Julian Berger retires in May of this year. I took the floor mainly to announce that the Convention on Biological Diversity is working with UNESCO for a global conference on biological and cultural diversity for development, which is scheduled to take place in Montreal on the 8th, 9th and 10th of June. The representative of the Permanent Forum will be invited to the global conference to the high-level event on the 8th of June to deliver the outcomes of this important 9th session and your discussion on identity with development with culture and identity. The global conference will look at adopting a joint program of work between the Convention on Biological Diversity and UNESCO and relevant Indigenous peoples organizations to look at concrete measures to advance the understanding on biological and cultural diversity and work that can be put into place for the coming years. So, of course, I won't take too much time because the Secretariat is scheduled for an in-depth dialogue this Friday with the members. But I thank you very much. Thank you.
Finalizando la jornada, el diálogo que hemos tenido con las agencias y con mis colegas del foro permanente, quisiera expresar algunas opiniones. Creo que ha sido importante el reconocimiento de que el desarrollo para los pueblos indígenas debe estar inscrito en el marco de lo que son los derechos de los pueblos indígenas reconocidos por la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, el artículo 3 y el 32, y reiterar la importancia del derecho a la libre determinación que tenemos los pueblos indígenas. Asimismo, en ese mismo marco, tener en cuenta el respeto y las salvaguardas tan importantes para la conservación de los territorios indígenas y el tema del autogobierno, que es el artículo 4 de la declaración. Asimismo, la necesidad de cumplir con el consentimiento libre, previo, informado en la declaración y de la misma forma tener en consideración el derecho a la consulta que prevé el convenio 169 de la OIT, Creo que es importante agradecer a las, al conjunto de las agencias y al grupo interagencial que coopera con el foro permanente en este avance significativo que tenemos. Hemos tenido importantes anuncios de parte de las agencias para seguir adelante con los progresos que tenemos en la aplicación de la declaración, pero también en pensar en temas tan importantes como es el derecho que tenemos al desarrollo, y desde los pueblos indígenas reiterar lo expresado ya por mis colegas de incorporar conceptos tan importantes como es sumacamaña en mi idioma materno o alincausa y sumacausa en el idioma quechua y vivir bien, pero que tienen también sus contrapartes en todas las culturas del mundo y que tienen que ver con esta concepción que tenemos con la tierra, que es como una madre para nosotros, y la necesidad de trabajar en una declaración. Mañana tendremos el diálogo con los pueblos indígenas y seguidamente con los gobiernos, y espero que las declaraciones que hoy hemos tenido tan importantes de las agencias sean la base de ese diálogo interactivo, pero también diálogo intercultural entre pueblos indígenas, estados y agencias. Quisiera ceder la palabra a la representación del Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia, que nos hará importantes anuncios. Tiene la palabra.
Gracias, señor presidente. En primer lugar, felicitarle por su elección como presidente de la novena sesión del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas. Informar a este foro que el día de mañana, 20 de abril, en Cochabamba, Bolivia, a las 9 de la mañana, nuestro presidente, hermano Evo Morales, hará la inauguración de la Conferencia Mundial de los Pueblos sobre el Cambio Climático y los Derechos de la Madre Tierra, donde se tendrá la presencia de 107 países con 13.000 delegados oficialmente confirmados, presidentes de diferentes gobiernos, representantes incluso autoconvocados. Se trata que entre el 20, 21 y 22 de abril se debatirá profundamente este tema de la Madre Tierra. En primer lugar, conmemorando el primer aniversario de la declaración del Día Internacional de la Madre Tierra, que ha sido una resolución aprobada por 192 países de las Naciones Unidas en esta misma sala, donde el hermano Evo Morales ha invitado a debatir sobre los derechos de la Madre Tierra. Y en segundo lugar, como una respuesta a buscar alternativas luego del fracaso de la cumbre de Copenhague, esta conferencia tiene 17 mesas que están organizadas, pero que fundamentalmente se trata, en primer lugar, de establecer los límites de la temperatura para los próximos 100 años. También el tema de la invasión del espacio atmosférico, el tema de cuánto de plata pondrán los responsables del cambio climático, es decir, establecer un nuevo contrato socioambiental, discutir sobre el tema del Tribunal de Justicia Climática y, entre todos estos, diseñar un referéndum mundial sobre estos diferentes temas. Es un esfuerzo para que desde los pueblos indígenas, a iniciativa de un presidente indígena, podamos buscar alternativas sobre el tema de la Madre Tierra. Ningún desarrollo será posible, señor presidente, ni desde la cultura con identidad, ni un desarrollo desde los moldes clásicos del desarrollismo, si no tomamos muy en serio el tema de la Madre Tierra y en escala planetaria. A eso se debe la realización de esta conferencia mundial. Muchas gracias.
Gracias por el anuncio, señor viceministro. La Secretaría tiene anuncios importantes que hacernos.
Thank you, sir. I was asked to make an announcement that during the ninth session of the Permanent Forum, you are welcome to visit the Technical Secretariat for Indigenous Delegates. It is located in room C, second floor, in the temporary North Lawn building. This technical secretariat offers the following free services to all indigenous delegates, thanks to its vast network of multilingual volunteers. They do translations from and to English, Spanish, French, and Russian languages. They do interpretation for your informal meetings and conversations to and from English, Spanish, French, and Russian. And also they have computers with printer and internet access. You can make photocopies. There is a phone and fax. And there is documentation available. So everyone is welcome. Thank you.
Muchas gracias. Mañana por la mañana proseguiremos el debate sobre el tema 3 del programa. La reunión tendrá lugar en este mismo salón. Entonces, levantamos la sesión.